of you who have been involved in these kind of studies, you may be thinking, why are we still looking at these types of studies? Haven't we beaten this kind of research approach to death? Well, there are events that are occurring in California now that has kind of re-emphasized us to look at some of the old factors that, such as cropping systems designed to address some of the economic problems that we are facing, environmental regulations, and above all, a new issue, that's labor. And before I get into that, I would like to acknowledge my co-authors, Carol Freight with the University of California Cooperative Extension, and Charlie Summers with UC Davis. Now, conservation tillage is fairly new for California. We have less than 2% of annual acreage, row crop acreage, under conservation tillage, and that may be very surprising to people from other states. And in California, we are focusing more on reducing the number of tillage passes rather than preserving surface residues, and the reason is that almost all of our acreage is irrigated, so when you have residues, you have problems with the water moving down the crop rows. The other reasons for low adoption of conservation tillage is we do not have locally available equipment and information on CT yet, and we still are inexperienced with CT techniques compared to other states. And as I said, predominantly we have surface gravity irrigation systems, and movement of water is a big issue when we have residue on the surface. And tillage intensive systems have been working well, in fact so well that they don't want to change anymore. And we have more than 200 types of crops growing in the Central Valley that designing CT systems for several of these crops are very challenging. However, there's more interest now in California at looking at CT systems, and that's because of NRCS grants that are available, rising fuel prices, and people are now converting to overhead irrigation systems. This is more to do with the labor shortage and extension activities of the CT work group is also helping people to look at some of the CT activities. So we have one of the strictest environmental regulations in the nation, air quality, dust, and water quality. So CT is one way to address some of these issues. And there's an opportunity for triple cropping with CT, and I'll get into that in a moment, what I mean by CT triple cropping. And so far, you know, there's not been a lot of adoption. It's mostly partnership with the growers of the CT work group that's working out. But there is new interest. And one interest is because of the labor shortage. The people are not being able to use labor as much as they could with as before with the surface irrigation. So now they're looking at overhead irrigation systems. So these overhead irrigation systems are coming back. And when you have overhead irrigation systems, residue does not seem to make a big problem. It is not a big problem for movement of water because you have an overhead irrigation system. So people are now willing to look at CT. The other thing is we often boast that California is number one in the nation for dairy. And that also means we are also number one in the nation for dairy waste or dairy manure. So there's a big problem in disposing the manure. So it's the dairy growers who are more interested in looking at CT opportunities. And there's a limit on how much of the waste nutrients you can apply. So it's 140% of the expected crop uptake that you're allowed to apply. So the rotation is, in these dairies, is small grain and then corn. And now what we've done is with CT created an opportunity for a third crop. We go from wheat, then corn, and then sorghum Sudan. So we have three crops. Because of all the operations that were involved in land prep and all that is not there anymore, we can afford to do that. So this has created some new interest in CT. As you can see here, corn is being wheat is being harvested in the foreground, and the same day you can see in the background that the corn is being planted. So there is no gap in time at all for land prep. Here's another shot of strip-till planting corn in wheat residue. they harvest corn right away, and that very day they are able to go and plant sorghum Sudan and get a third crop. So the manure that was sitting around can now be applied to a third crop. So there's some advantage of using manure and getting rid of the manure. And the same day they flood irrigate the plot. So it's a very rapid process and helps us get three crops. Traditionally, corn has been planted in raised beds, and we have furrows for irrigation in a conventional tillage system. But now, when this is gone, the tillage raised bed is gone, we have a flat planting system, and with GPS-guided equipment, now we can go and plant in flat, plant it, irrigate, and then apply pesticides by air, and we have harvest equipment that is flexible to do the harvest. So that's why people are now trying to get into CT systems and look at this CT as a new tool. Studies elsewhere have found that narrow rows and higher corn density reduce the need for long-term residual herbicides, and people have shown that corn yields can be increased by 10 to 15% in narrow rows. But these results have not been consistent. It seems to vary a lot based on climatic conditions, the cropping systems, and the dominant weed species. So in our experiment, our rationale was to use narrow rows so that the canopy would close early and the weeds would be shaded out, later emerging weeds would be shaded out, and some weeds germinate that require light for germination may not germinate, and increased crop density may help the crops compete better for resources, and light levels under the canopy can also influence insect pest dynamics. So we looked at two row spacings, 38 versus 76 centimeters, and three plant populations, 69, 86, and 104,000 plants per hectare, and the light interception patterns in these plots, weed populations, insect dynamics, and crop yield. The experiment was an on-farm experiment. We harvested winter forage and planted it same day as harvest on May 13th and 14th in 2004 and 2005, and we used a Roundup Ready variety. We used a no-till planter using GPS system. The experiment was a split plot with row spacing as the main effect, main plot, and plant population as subplot, and they were replicated four times. The plot size was 7.6 meter by quarter mile, that's the length of the standard length of the growers' fields, and we aerially applied glyphosate in June. We took photosynthetically active radiation measurements above and below the corn canopy by placing a septometer perpendicular to the crop rows. We looked at stalk diameter, weed populations mid-season and at harvest. We looked at weed biomass and then looked at insect densities. Corn insects were leafhoppers, aphids, and leaf miners. And of course, we looked at crop yield. Moving on to the results, I took counts at the time of herbicide application and found that 55% of the weeds that were present were volunteers from the previous volunteer weeds, the previous crop in this case was wheat, so it's volunteer wheat was 55% of the weed population, and then we had other weeds like pigweed and barnyard grass. Light interception by corn canopy, we found that the narrow rows were intercepting more light from the beginning of the season, and this continued while the wide rows caught up in about 90th day of the year, and same pattern in 2005. So the 2 years showed that 38 centimeter rows closed canopies about 6 to 13 days earlier than the 76 centimeter rows. We didn't see any effect of the row spacing or the plant population on weed densities in 2004. However, in 2005, we saw that the narrow rows had fewer weeds than the wide rows, and we saw some interactions between the population and spacing as well in the wide rows. And the weed biomass at corn harvest, again, no effect of the population, but we saw a big effect of the row spacing. And the effect was more pronounced in 2005. As you can see, the wheat biomass was almost totally suppressed in the narrow rows. And a visual picture of the weed pressure in the 36 versus 76 centimeter rows. As you can see, the 36 centimeter rows is pretty clean compared to the 76 centimeter rows. Well, of course, this is one of the best comparative plots, but the idea is that they were lower. We looked at insects, corn leaf hopper, leaf aphid, leaf miner. We had sticky traps monitored from June to August, and we found an interesting event that plant populations did not affect insect populations, but I mean the other way around. Row spacing did not affect the insect populations, but the corn plant populations did affect insects. So for weeds, the row spacing was more effective. For insects, the plant population within the rows was more effective. And leaf hopper densities were about half of what it was in the wide row compared to the narrow row. Aphid numbers were also reduced. And in some cases, the aphid number of aphids were below the thresholds for treatment in the high population plots. Leaf miner populations, again, 2 to 3 times greater in the wide row versus the narrow row. We didn't see any effect on yield. The yield was similar between the row spacings and the plant populations. We did see that the stalk diameter was significantly higher in the 38 centimeter rows than the 76 centimeter rows. And as a friendly advice, if you do narrow row corn spacing, you wouldn't want to hire a football player because otherwise you'll end up taking all the data by yourself in the narrow rows. And that's what happened to me here. So in conclusion, the preceding crop in the rotation may be the predominant weed in the no-till systems. The wide rows intercepted more light and closed canopy 6 to 13 days earlier than the wide rows. And weed density at the mid-season was lower in the 38 than the 76 centimeter rows in 1 year of the study. Weed biomass was lower in the 76 centimeter rows, 38 centimeter rows. I get confused between inches and rows, so excuse me. 38 than in the 76 centimeter rows in both years. So again, plant population had no effect on light interception or weed dynamics, but as I showed, that they did affect the insect population, and I think we need to look at this in more detail, why intra-row spacing is more important than inter-row spacing for insect populations. And some caveats we ran into is dairy growers usually rely on custom applicators for glyphosate application, so they don't really know when their custom applicator is going to come in to do the spray. So if you have a system where the canopy closes early, they don't prefer that. They would rather have the canopy more open so when the aerial herbicide is sprayed, it does go down to the weeds. And growers did not see any immediate benefits to growing corn in the 38 centimeter rows. And they're more interested in twin rows now, so they are looking at twin rows. And I guess this was one of the last studies on row spacing in the past 2-3 years. Now they're looking more at twin rows. Thanks. With that, I can take any questions.
We have time for one or two questions.
No, we haven't looked at it in detail, and the entomologist working with me, he's going to be looking at it in more detail, because we didn't expect that in the beginning. We were more focused on the inter-row spacing, but the results were very interesting.
I've got a question. Did you look at corn ear size? Because we've done some narrow row spacing where we get higher yield in when we have narrow rows, but the corn ear size itself is smaller when you compare it to our wider rows?
We didn't look at that specifically because this is a silage corn.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's thank our speaker.